everyone, this is Catherine O'Connell and welcome to Lawyer On Air. If you are looking for inspirational stories about women in law, then this is the podcast for you. Join me and my lawyer ladies as we enjoy a glass of wine after a hard day at work and talk about the world of women in law. It's my passion to share stories of amazing legal ladies who are working as in-house legal counsel, who have law firm roles, who are leading on boards and who are doing law differently. From time to time, I will also invite special guests on the show to share their insights on legal recruiting and tips for getting hired as a successful lawyer in Japan. I hope you will enjoy getting to know these amazing women who I am so proud to share a profession with. I'm glad you're here and I hope you enjoy the show. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode in the Lawyer On Air podcast. In this episode, I share with you another diverse story of a woman lawyer working in Japan. I'm Catherine, the host of the show, and I'm a lawyer based in Tokyo for more than 20 years, and I love helping unlock the wisdom of the stories that women lawyers never tell. What I've learned from my career in law so far is be passionate and go all in. Those are the words of my guest, Kotoe Oshima. Kotoe is an M&A associate at Sherman & Sterling's Tokyo office who specializes in cross-border M&A, and she particularly enjoys advising Japanese companies achieve complex global transactions. Kotoe has quite the international upbringing. As a Japanese citizen, she was born in Singapore, raised in Hong Kong and the UK, before moving to the US to pursue her undergraduate degree and first law role. She works on a higher purpose in all that she does and actively seeks out interns to mentor in the office and receive their reverse mentoring. Collaborating like this on many levels is what has been key for Kotoe in her life and career, as you will find out. She also makes time for her joy projects that include sports and a side gig designing some very useful things that I think you will be interested to hear about. You can check out Kotoe's full bio in the show notes. On this episode, Kotoe shares with us how an early experience with the Legal Aid Society as an intern taught her a lot about the other side of the law and confirmed her desire to be a transactions lawyer. She also shares her view about the positive nature of Japanese companies and their decision making, and that it's really up to us to show the way in business as a woman and not wait for a hierarchy of government to change and become inclusive and diverse in representation. We can do so much at grassroots level. Kotoe also turns the mic on me and asks for my tips on managing a law firm merger. Well, I've had three of these in my life as a lawyer so far, so I gave tips that will hopefully be helpful to anyone who's embarking on a merger. And Kotoe also shares her favorite place in Japan, her motto inspired by her parents, and who it is that she'd love to meet from history, as well as other fun facts. Let's get into it. Hello, Kotoe, and welcome to Lawyer On Air podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited. And before we get started, I wanted to say I'm super excited to be on this podcast and be invited. I do want to congratulate you for winning the best podcast by Kiwi Abroad and being nominated for all these business podcasts, you and Jane. So I feel very honored to be part of this community in Japan.
That's lovely of you to say that. That was not prompted, listeners, by the way. Thank you so much for putting that in there. I know that Carl, who you work with, is a super fan as well, and he's a tremendous supporter. So I'm really glad that you're finally here on the show. And I know that since you listen to the podcast a lot, you know this first question, which is if we were to meet up in person, and I hope we can do that very soon, maybe the three of us, where would we be? Would you have a particular wine bar or restaurant that you like, and what would you choose off the menu?
So having listened to lots of your podcasts, Catherine, I'm not copying you, but champagne is also my favorite beverage.
Oh, right. You're in my club.
But I also love wines. I also love cocktails. My go-to cocktail place is Mixology Heritage. I think I was mentioned by another one of your podcasters as well, but it's quite close to Sherman and Ginza. and it's a little lovely space. They have really cool cocktails, like a blue cheese martini, which I know sounds weird, but it's actually amazing. And the other day at Sherman, we hosted a summer event where we learned to make espresso martinis, Negronis. I'm kind of glad we didn't make the blue cheese martini because I don't know what that would have entailed, but really lovely space that I'd recommend anyone coming to Tokyo.
Very cool. I mean, I can't even imagine what that might be like, but it must taste okay if people are serving it. And yes, somebody did mention mixology in the past, but have not been there yet. So would love to join you there. Thank you for that. They've probably got champagne cocktails as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think you have to order the blue cheese.
Right, but I'm very intrigued about that. Interesting. So let's go back a little bit to think about when you were a child, or maybe when you were growing up in your younger years. What were you thinking about or dreaming about to be in the future or experience in the future?
So I'm Japanese by heritage. My parents are both Japanese, but I have quite an international background. I was born in Singapore, grew up in Hong Kong and England, and then I moved to the States for university and then stayed there since. So throughout my childhood, as well as my higher education years, I always thought I would become an international ambassador, work for the UN, all these international organizations, and more towards foreign diplomacy. I think that's quite true for a lot of my colleagues and other lawyers I've met who really lean towards the humanities and have the international background. Yeah. So yeah, that's what I wanted to be. But I thought having a law degree would be a great first step to go towards that. Very, very luckily, I ended up with a summer internship at Sherman and Sterling's Tokyo office. Our managing partner, Masai Saikeda, hired me as an intern and kind of changed my mind about how much positive things I could do for the society through being a lawyer. So that's how I shifted towards law.
Because originally, when you think about law, it doesn't just pop in your head. Was there somebody who influenced you, or did you see someone on a TV program or hear about someone or something in particular that brought you to the law? It doesn't just pop in there, does it? It's something you think about or see or hear, or did it in fact make you just sort of, you just thought, law, I just want to do that?
I think I graduated undergrad and I wasn't quite ready to go right into the workforce or, you know, apply to the UN. So I thought law school. And once I got there, at least in the States, there's a big group of us going towards big law. And I guess I kind of, you know, got on the escalator, thought I'd give it a try. And then once I started, that's when it really clicked to me. Oh, I do want to be a lawyer. So that's how I got into the industry.
So in between, when you got your undergrad, then you did the internship at Sherman and Sterling. Is that right?
During my undergrad, I already knew I wanted to go to law school. So to build my resume, I actually interned at the Legal Aid Society in Queens, New York, which was a very exciting experience.
Tell me more about that, because I had that as one of my questions to ask you about. That's pretty unusual. How did you end up there and what did you do there?
I initially wanted Manhattan, but those spots were all taken. So the ones left were the Bronx and the Queens.
Wow.
A Queens bureau. And I thought the Bronx might be a bit too dangerous for me, so I picked Queens. But it was still quite a crazy experience because as undergraduate interns, we would only be allowed to handle misdemeanor cases and not felonies. But still, when we went out on investigations, we would always have an investigator with us and he would always be carrying a gun. We would go into these dens. Sometimes people are doing drugs in front of us. There was a lot of, it has been exacerbated in the last couple of years, but back in, I think I want to say I did my internship in 2012, 2013, there was already so much mistrust with the police system in America. So even though we're acting for the public defender's office, if they see any corporate people asking about events or if they've witnessed anything, they automatically associate us with the authorities. And we just wouldn't get a friendly interaction. So seeing that firsthand was also a great experience, as well as some scary, hairy moments where we were chased by someone. So All good fun.
Wow. Yeah. I'm glad you call it good fun now. But how did that change your life? It must have changed your life or your view on the law or people who are mixed up in the law in some way in a negative sense.
It definitely gave me an opening into parts of society that I didn't really see, especially as a very sheltered undergraduate intern or undergraduate student in rural America. So being in a city, that was my first time. I spent time in New York, and seeing people experience and go through these things, it definitely provides more context for some, you know, what we're seeing in the news today.
Right. And did this spur you along to continue doing law rather than turn you away from it?
I think that was a great experience for me to have in my life. But having gone through law school as well as my internship at Sherman, I definitely shifted more towards corporate.
Right.
Not because of any push factors, but my interest geared towards corporate.
But great grounding, isn't it, to do that? And I think back to days where I was in court in New Zealand, and it wasn't where I wanted to end up, but it was super good for learning about the way people treated each other, fights that they might have, how people end up in a situation where probably less privileged in some ways, and sort of a respect for what you are doing yourself and the privileges that we have, and also the way that we can actually help other people. It can just be something small that turns them around the right corner. But it's interesting, isn't it? But you find out too what you don't want to do by doing some other kinds of work. So I see that. Absolutely. And you'd come to Duke, right, to do your JD.
So Duke was my undergraduate degree.
Oh, Duke was your undergrad, and then your JD was at Cornell.
Yes.
Got it. Right. And then you did the interning job now that you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah, so I was very fortunate to have found Sherman and Sterling my first year of law school. I interned at the Tokyo office.
Right.
I received an offer back. So my second 2L summer, that's the formal summer associate program that they call in the States. I split my summer between New York and Tokyo. And then after I graduated, I requested to start in New York. So that's how I started my career in the New York office of Sherman Sterling.
Got it. How exciting. So once you get in on one of those associate summer roles, it sort of leads you to go through with that firm and, like you have done, spend a lot of your life there.
Yes, absolutely. I think for me, it was really a great fit because I really enjoyed everyone I met at Sherman. I think it's the first time actually in my life where I felt like I found a home. I know this is very weird to say, but especially in the Tokyo office, we have Japanese people or foreigners living in Japan, but who have had such a diverse international experience. And having grown up abroad, I was often only one or two of the very few Japanese people at my school. So it was really cool to meet a whole office full of other people like me. And they were also very passionate about, you know, contributing to society in Japan. So that really inspired me to really pick and pursue my career with Sherman, because I felt that obviously our client, our deal, they're very important to us. They take priority, but we all have a very bigger picture of, you know, how we contribute to society, what we can do for Japan. So that really spoke to my core values.
Right. That's so important, isn't it? And I think we overlook that because of what's in front of us, right? Not seeing the wood for the trees or the trees for the wood, because we're looking after the clients every day, but doing something broader for society. What has been some of the highs and lows over those times that you were in New York? You've talked a little bit about one experience of being chased. That might be a low. And also you had time in Singapore with them as well. What would you say, what sticks out as something that was really great that happened? And perhaps it's tying into that contribution to society.
I'll answer those two questions separately because I have great answers for both.
So, please, go ahead.
So in New York, obviously we're dealing with a lot of public M&A. So most of my work was public M&A and a few private M&A deals. So they're very established clients. They're very sophisticated. They know what they're doing. Really, really great clients to work with. Then I came to Singapore, where I was put on a few deals in India as well as Southeast Asia. And it was the first time I experienced cross-cultural elements on a transaction. So I was advising on a transaction where the target company was in India. The founder of the target company was from Chennai, which is a very superstitious area in India. And so he, during the transaction, he actually called his shaman or fortune teller to come read the stars to see when the right time to sign the documents would be.
Wow, that's cool.
So, yeah, I'd get an email going, okay, wow. So we can only sign Tuesday from 4 to 7 p.m. or Thursday from 2 to 3 a.m. And we would have to work around the star planetary alignment to get our deal done.
Whoa, that is really amazing. I haven't heard of that before. That's great. I mean, we have good luck days and bad luck days in Japan too, right? In the Buddhist calendar.
Yeah.
And often transactions may settle or close on those days, but this is interesting. Wow, keep going.
I actually haven't had the Japanese version of it.
Haven't you? Right. Yeah. So it's sometimes like Butsumetsu, the bad luck day, you wouldn't do something. You'll do something on Taiyan instead on a good luck day. Yeah, that's happened a few times for M&A deals that I've done in the past. It's been quite interesting. People just check the calendar quickly. Oh, yeah, that's okay. It's a Taiyan. Or it's a Tomobiki. That's okay.
Fantastic. We can put in our resumes that we're able to do complex transactions as well as accommodate your planetary alignment.
Really excellent. How interesting. Carry on. You had more to tell.
Oh, yeah. Highlights of my experience in Japan. So one of the reasons why I came back to Japan is, firstly, I'm Japanese, but I've never lived in my own country. So it's really
interesting, isn't it? That is interesting.
Yeah, so it's really cool to discover and learn about my own culture, even though obviously I'm Japanese at home. My parents are Japanese, so I do have a really good basis of having a Japanese identity. But I think the reason why I came back to my country is because I have all these international experiences. I really wanted to see how I can best contribute to Japan. Being Japanese abroad has given me so many special and unique opportunities, and I wanted to see how I can contribute back. And obviously this is still my third month, but it's been really exciting to meet lots of like-minded people like me. I'm collaborating with different organizations, professional and educational. Right now I'm leaning more towards education, but mentoring young students, organizing professional events or mentorship events, and I'm trying to explore in what ways can I contribute to the country, as well as obviously advising on Japanese clients and their international deals, because I think that's my expertise that I'll bring. I'll help them negotiate against Western yes. counterparts.
So hang on, so you're doing your M&A deals as your say day job, right? Every day, that's the juice that you're doing. But what's this about the organizational element with the educational groups and the mentoring? Is that something that the firm encourages you to do? Is it while you're at work? Is it pro bono? What is that? Tell me a bit more about that. That sounds really interesting.
Absolutely. I think Sherman and Sterling, the reason why I really love the office here is because I have so many mentors and inspiring characters in the office. So for example, Carl Perez, and I have another colleague, Brandon Whitaker, who's a capital markets associate. They both teach as law professors at universities in Tokyo, which is a fantastic experience. And our managing partner, Masai Saikeda, he also sits on the board of charities, attends international committees and events. And he most recently was one of the co-founders of United World College in Karuizawa, which actually Brandon and I are both alumni of. And so he was the one that actually introduced me to the school UWC. Because I'm an alum, I was already involved in the Singapore camp with the Singapore campus. So I thought, oh, it's great. It's a great opportunity to be involved as well. And we've hosted a couple of interns from UWC in the past. They're really big on helping, providing equal access for all sorts of backgrounds. So we try and provide internship opportunities for people who don't have family connections into law. So they have an in with the industry. But yeah, so because I think our whole office is really geared towards trying to achieve and do positive things for the society. It's obviously not our billable work. Billable work takes priority, but these are things we all like to do in our spare time, and and we all really put our energy into. So
absolutely.
Yes, it's not quite our billable job, but I think if you're really passionate about it and if you have people around you that are also doing these things, you also feel very inspired, and it's really easy to do. So for example, if I'm hosting an intern, I'll email other partners, and it's super easy to get approval from them because they also support the cause.
Mm. How does it help you then in your day-to-day work? Are you thinking about the benefits of doing that kind of activity? How does that feed into the way that you do your daily work, or the other way around, I guess, too? But more so how the working with interns and the way that they're thinking and their different age group, for example, right, or different backgrounds, does that help you in the way that you do your daily work as well?
Yes, I think all this together really helps my career, at least for me in my career, even with the day-to-day tasks. It's great to have a purpose. And I think my purpose is to really contribute to the society mm-hmm. here. So I'm doing that as an M&A lawyer. I'm doing that by trying to mentor young adults who want to enter the profession. And so I think it provides a clear purpose of why I'm here doing what I do and how I can try and help people around me.
Right. So it's purpose, and it's all woven in together. It sounds like to me that one, they're sort of impacting each other, not so much that this happened today and it's impacting this that I'm doing right now, but it's over time and over a certain period. It's just all woven in together.
Yes, I think you put it a lot more eloquently than I have. So
I'm not sure. But hang on a minute. I'm going to go back a little bit further, though, too, because there's something you missed out in your background that you did that just sprung out for me. And that was this stint on the news desk as an intern for CNN.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
I found that out about you. Tell me about that, because, I mean, this is going back and it's chopping from what we've just talked about. But we'll come back to that. In May to August in 2011, was it? You did 4 months with CNN. I want to know how that came about and how on earth you got that job and what did you do while you were doing that? Have fun.
So even though I said I wanted to be a diplomat, I did go through a lot of trial and error. So I actually wanted to be an astronaut and an engineer. And I initially went to Duke to go into the engineering school. Decided I want to do journalism after writing for our school newspaper, The Chronicle. Mm. So I was also a writer there. And having that on my resume, I think that's how I ended up having the internship at CNN International in Hong Kong. It was really cool to work with some of the headline anchors that I would still see on TV today. It's like I actually did the prompt for them.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's how it came about. I can't quite recall how I got in. Maybe I applied. There could have been a connection. But yeah, I think it helped that I had my school newspaper experience on my resume to get that.
Fantastic. Wow, it just shows you. And I loved how you said that you did trial and error, that you tried many different things. And here you are thinking, being an astronaut or an engineer and doing journalism, and here you've landed in the law. And maybe there's chances to do those sorts of things in some other way in the future. How exciting.
Yeah, I still think it's quite trial and error of how I'm still figuring out what I can bring to the country and how I can help Japan. So that's a trial and error process right now.
Can I ask you what your average day would look like now then? If you're getting up and through from, morning through to the evening, if you don't mind me asking you, because I'm wondering how you fit all these different pieces in. What it might look like, a typical day, if there's a typical day.
I think it's hard to have a typical day, especially in M&A or I'm sure any other corporate field, just because of the wave and the nature of our deal. So when we're on, we're really on. I'll start my calls and negotiations at 6, 7 a.m. because of the time zones and work until past midnight. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes I'll have days where I'm working on all of these background things and projects, and I'll only answer a few emails during the day. So yeah, very, very different days every day.
And how do you keep yourself then balanced and active? Because I do know you spend a lot of activities outside of the office, keeping yourself quite refreshed and into sports. How do you find the time for that? Do you carve it out on your calendar, or do you do those at certain other times when you're not on calls for M&A deals?
I think when I'm on calls, my deals, if it's a live deal and I know people are expecting responses from me, it's hard to schedule, for example, a tennis game or a run or a hiking session. So I try and schedule these in between my deals. So I'm sure, unlike other people, I don't really have a rigorous schedule of, oh, I play tennis once a week or I go to the gym X times a week.
Yeah, I get
It
you.
fits into my life when I can.
I see. Excellent. But in between deals makes sense, right? You can go on a hiking trek, or I know you like tennis, wake surf. Wow. Hiking, right? That's great. So you're keeping yourself fit and doing that in between the deals, which is obviously necessary. You can't be hiking off somewhere when you're in the middle of, just about to close and things like that, right?
Although I have taken my laptop
Oh,
with me hiking
have you?
numerous times and surprised my friends when I whip my laptop out and hotspot through my phone in the middle of a hike.
I
So,
would say that would surprise me as well. Oh my goodness. There you go. Well, what else is happening at the firm? I know you've got some things coming up, and perhaps there's some other programs or initiatives you can are particularly interested in, you can talk about that you've got some perhaps permission from those who are in the firm who can, you're allowed to talk about. Is there anything that you want to speak about?
yeah, so I'd love to talk about this very exciting opportunity. So we announced recently that Sherman and Sterling is merging with an English law firm, Allen and Overy.
Indeed.
So that's been a very exciting news. I think we all feel very excited and positive about it. For me personally, very selfishly, I am very excited just because as an M&A lawyer, it's so rare to be on the other side of this transaction and to actually go through a merger yourself. Even on M&A secondments, it's really rare to be seconded just in the middle of an M&A transaction, or for you to have that historical knowledge to understand the real implications of what a merger would look like. So for me to be able to go through the merger and experience it myself, I think is a tremendous career opportunity. So I almost feel like they did it just for me, but I'm sure they have bigger
Maybe
reasons of why
not,
they
maybe
did
not. But
this.
so what's it informing you or teaching you then about how you then interact with your clients for your M&A deals, right? You're experiencing this firsthand. And there might be things that are like, oh, I never knew it was like that for the recipient of the advice or the part of that transaction. Is there anything that's happened so far with that that you've thought, ah, I might do the next M&A deal just a little bit differently in that particular part, having experienced this right now that you're going through?
Absolutely. With doing deals, so many deals a year, it becomes a little bit more routine. And of course, we're always thinking about the clients and what's best for the clients. But I think we're thinking more in terms of, financially, what is the best for them, or in terms of human resources or ESG, all these big theoretical considerations. I think now I'm seeing more of the emotional side. Having a merger announced at my own firm is really exciting. Sometimes you have all these questions. So I now feel emotionally what it feels like to go through a merger. So I think that's a really exciting element. And often M&A lawyers, once we sign and close a deal, there's very limited interaction with post-merger integration process of PMI. But now, because I am going to be involved in the PMI process, I am part of that PMI process. So I pay a lot more attention to things like that now.
Interesting, isn't it?
So, Catherine, I know that you went through three mergers in your career as well. I'd love to get some advice or tips on how, Sherman and A&O can best go through this collaboration.
Oh, well, I'd just say from my experience, it's tough. You don't know what it's going to be at the end. You know it's going to happen, but you don't know where everyone's going to fit into the pieces of the puzzle, right? Who's getting what offices, who's sitting with who. And these kinds of things start to implode in your mind. You start to think about things that really, at the end of the day, don't matter. So my advice would be don't worry about who gets that office or who's teamed up with that person or what view you're going to have out of the office. Those sorts of things don't really matter at the end of the day. It all comes together. So think more about getting to know the people who are on the other team who are coming together with you. Find out as much as you can about them. and get to know them really, really well. So a couple of things that we did was we had some drinks beforehand, or we had some activity where we went and did, it was actually something like clay shooting. You know, in New Zealand, you can do this sort of thing. They bang off clay and you fire at it, but it's everyone's cheering together and teaming together. And as you're waiting for others to tee up, you're talking together. Right. Mm. So you're doing the activity, but it's not about the activity. It's about you getting together and seeing each other and hearing and listening what they have to say and just becoming more close. So I'd suggest, if you haven't already done things like that, is to do a few of those things. And even associate initiatives are brilliant. Right. I just thought we'd get the, you know, second or third years together, and I just want to get together at a X place, or it could be drinks, but not everyone drinks. So an activity like that really brings out people's, I guess, competitiveness in one way, but their teamwork and encouraging. And I found that was really brilliant. So I don't know if that answers your question, but having gone through it three times, I realized by the last time, it didn't matter where I sat in the office. It doesn't matter a hoot. But if you can get caught up in things like that, which are very superficial, it will drain your emotion. It'll make you angry and jealous, or it might make you be unmotivated, where that shouldn't really happen. It should be an exciting time, even though there's many unknowns. It's like most things in this life. You don't know what the end result is going to actually be. You just know it's going to happen. So go with the flow. Try to be getting to know the other people who are on the other side. We've had a few of them on the podcast. They are super lovely people. I know you're going to be a great family together. And just go for it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's great advice. Also, the other reason why I think this module was meant for me is because I've only ever worked at Sherman and Sterling, even though I've worked in Sherman's different offices. I've done New York, Singapore, Hong Kong, and now Tokyo. So even though different offices have a different culture, it's still the same firm. So this is my first time experiencing another law firm. So that's the other reason why I'm very excited about it.
Right, you get to have another law firm come in, and a different culture and a different way of doing things, and you'll learn from them. And you didn't even have to change. Like,
I didn't have to interview.
interview for it. So that's another thing, is that a whole range of expertise and the way that people do things, you'll pick the best of both. And that's what happens from a merger as well. So there's plenty to look forward to. Thank you for sharing that. Really excited. So I'm going to ask you the question I ask everybody. And that is about the biggest thing you've learned from your career so far. So the most important thing, I have learned from my career in law so far is?
For me, it was really important to me to pursue a career that I enjoyed. Even though parts of M&A can be extremely challenging, both mentally and physically, you're pulling really late nights and a lot is being demanded from you. I actually really enjoy drafting. I love negotiating. So it helps to be able to enjoy your job. And I do have to say, for anyone in law right now, it took me a good few years to be able to get to this place. So if you are still a due diligence machine, persevere, get through it, because it does get better. The other thing that I touched upon before, but that really helped me, was having a bigger purpose of, what are your skill sets? What do you bring to the table? How can you contribute best? And for me, I knew I wanted to do something positive for Japan with my skill sets. I thought the best way to use my skills and my time was through being a lawyer and advising Japanese clients interact with foreign counterparts, or vice versa, you know, advising foreign clients do business in Japan. So to be able to be the best version of myself, even when I was going through my junior years, I had goals like, okay, to get to where I want to go, I have to be really good at due diligence, I have to produce really good memos, I have to be really good at drafting and negotiating. So for me, it helped to have a greater purpose.
Absolutely. So you're bringing something else in there, the greater purpose that goes beyond the actual day-to-day mechanics and cogs of the things that you're doing. Interesting. So what would you then say for young lawyers who are coming up the ranks behind you? What kind of one or two tips would you give them to be thinking about or not to worry about? Perhaps you could envisage one of your interns and them getting into their first job, what they might need to know from Kotoe's toolbox of experience.
Actually, the other reason why I love it having interns is they're so positive and bright. They bring such a good energy to the office. I think it's a very trendy thing now called reverse mentoring, but I use my interns as a reverse mentor and I learn so many things from them. I think if they're passionate about what they're doing and if they know that they want to be a lawyer and that's how they want to contribute to the workforce, they just have to go for it all in. Sometimes it will get difficult, but it's also extremely rewarding. So I hope they really enjoy what they're doing.
Absolutely. And is there anything in particular for women lawyers that you might think is an advantage to look at or to focus on for their careers in particular?
Yes, I think especially both in Asia as well as, you know, the States and Europe, there's still a minority of female partners, especially in corporate practice groups and big law. I do think women bring so much value to the table. And especially in Japan, I've come to Japan at a really interesting time where, you know, we are demanding more women to enter the workforce just because our population is declining. We have fewer students, fewer births, aging population. So we have a higher demand for skilled workforce, and obviously technology, immigration, and I think women are some of the untapped talent in this country. So we are going to see more and more women enter the workforce and take leadership roles. So I think it's a really exciting time to be a woman, and especially in law. So we'll see more and more transformations in the next coming years, I think both in the home as well as systematically in the country, as well as corporations that will support women to be able to have fantastic careers and achieve great things professionally.
Brilliant. Do you think it's then up to this business world with women in it to be helping influence, for example, the Japanese government, who has quite well shown in the last few weeks their lack of diversity in women appointments, right, into the, well, the cabinet had a few, but the greater part of the government has no women appointed. What do you have to say about that? Right, as a woman, a Japanese woman working in Japan, doing your best and encouraging other women to rise up in the business world, yet at the top of Japan, we have this different image being portrayed to us. Anything you'd like to say about that?
Yes, we all did see this in the news and it did come up in all my group chats with my friends. I think seeing things like that to me and my, you know, professional female colleagues and friends, that shows us is the best way forward is to be an example by ourselves. So it makes me want to go further in my own career and then be an example for hopefully the new generation. So I hope I can do that as well. But on a greater societal scale, I think Japan is at a really important inflection point where people are going to realize they can't just rely on the male workforce. We first of all need women just because of the declining population. And so the country is going to do more to accommodate, to create a great working environment for women. So yes, I think we see things like that at the top, but I still think it's a really exciting time for the business world, the corporate world. We have already started seeing changes. So I'm not too pessimistic. I'm really excited to see the changes that are going to come.
Excellent. Great. I know you're only into your 3 months at the firm officially. What are you looking forward to in the forthcoming 12 months or so?
So this is only my third month in the country, but I have already learned so much about Japan and, you know, the way Japanese corporations do business, how people in society interact. I think it'll be a lot more of observation, seeing how I can bring value, figuring out what my skill sets are and how I fit in. So some of the great observations I've seen are, for example, I think people often simplify, for example, timing and efficiency. So this is true with some of the traditional clients that I have here. Compared to, for example, American private equity firms, Japanese corporations are a lot more, you know, structured and some might say bureaucratic in doing things. For example, getting a board approval or shareholder approval, you need to have submitted the criteria by a certain date and you have to have the stamp. So it seems outdated, but I think, you know, even in my 3 months, I've really come to appreciate that there isn't a right and wrong of fast and efficient is better. I've started to see a lot of value in the way Japanese companies are doing things because they have this very great order methodology of approaching decision-making. Also, it's a risk tolerance factor as well, but having that space to really consider a decision allows them to have more attention to detail and think of decisions more long-term. So I know companies here are not just, you know, short-term focused to try and get the best earning results for the next shareholders meeting. So I know people always talk about efficiency and timing, but I think there's positives in both. So yeah, I think right now I'm trying to see some of the differences and way companies here approach work. And yeah, I don't know in what way I can help in the future, but it's really cool to be learning a lot.
Very good, right? And you've called out some really interesting things there, that Japanese companies take a lot of time to do a lot of the work at the beginning of the transaction or deal or whatever they're thinking about, so that things don't come up along the way that might disrupt what they've decided. So they'll do it all at the front end, perhaps, typically speaking. Get the buy-in and then go for it, and something will go quite smoothly because everyone's got the buy-in. You've thought about all different things, especially if you've got a good board who are giving all the outside and inside perspectives. And whereas maybe some other companies that are not Japanese may get going and work it out as they go along. So then neither is wrong, it's just a different way of approaching things, right? And understanding that as an observation from being here for just even a short time is a great thing.
And if you even look at the country, obviously, I'm not sure about the causality and effects, but the customer service here is phenomenal, world class. Every product you buy here, there's so much thought that has gone into it. And I think that Japan has the highest number of companies that are over 100 or 200 years old. So things like that really goes to show maybe, you know, the way Japanese companies approach in a more traditional, methodical way. It isn't always a bad thing. So I think it's interesting to find a good balance. And I'm also, you know, through listening to your podcast and listening to other general counsels at other Japanese companies, it's interesting to see how they found a good balance. For example, I want to mention Angela Yuan at JERA. Her podcast was really exciting. And, you know, I know she's quite a good leader in legal tech and legal ops. So I think she and her organization, they're finding a good balance between things like this.
Very good. And you may hear some more from Jera coming up in some other episodes as well. Yeah, Angela's episode is super amazing and she brings out a lot there. Great. Well, I know we're going to end up very shortly our conversation here, and I'll be doing some other sort of lighthearted questions to lead. But just before we go there, just switching a little bit there, I know you've got some other things that you do in your external time when you're not doing sports, and I think your grandparents have been very inspirational in the way that you're doing this. You're designing some items, and I'd really love to just share that, because when I read your bio, I thought this was fantastic and my attention went to it. Not to say everything else wasn't amazing, because it certainly is, but this has picked up my interest. So tell me a little bit more about this, because I think I'd love the listeners to hear.
Yes, I'd love to talk about my project. So I've started this project with my childhood friend from Hong Kong, Angela. She's also a consultant, and we both have Asian grandparents who have mobility issues, but we adore our grandparents. We want the best for them. And I think what we realized is Angela and I are both drawn to beautiful aesthetics. Mm-hmm. And when we went to shop for our grandparents, or when we would hear about our parents shopping for them, it was really difficult to find beautiful clothing that, you know, had the elderly as customers and consumers in mind. Just given my Japanese background, you know, Japan is an aging society. Even at a department store, you have a whole floor with clothes catered just for the elderly. We don't really have that anywhere else in the world, like the US or China, where these countries are starting to become, you know, an aging population. So we thought, what wonderful way to try and hopefully dress our grandparents in the future. by creating luxury clothing that really think of the mobility needs of elderly. So it's a little project that we've started on. We're still in the prototyping stage, but we're hoping very, very soon to be able to dress our grandparents in luxury wear.
God, I'd love this. I absolutely love this, because why should we give away the luxury or the beautifulness of clothing just because we're getting older? Really, I just can't wait to see your grandparents dressed in what they're going to be dressed in, and even just a mock-up. And we've got some people in the community, I'm sure, could help you with things like that, how to get something sort of going, right? People who are doing this kind of... Yeah.
And we're actually always looking for volunteers to try and fit our clothing. And it's really cool to meet so many elderly people. You know, some people have... My grandma has Parkinson's, so her arms are impaired. Other elderly people that I've met, you know, they have, for example, a colostomy bag. How does that affect your clothing needs?
Yes.
But they should, if they want to, they should feel great in luxury clothing that are made from great fabric and really think about their design needs.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot here. There could be some seed funding available. There could also be some other startups that are doing things already. I know of another company that does magnetic fastenings, because if it's difficult to do buttons, a very good looking magnetic fastening can also be really super easy, but not look like it's velcroed, right? It looks really cool. So there's different ways of doing this kind of thing. And yeah, luxury when you get older, why should it be in a section that's a bit dowdy, or, you know, only dedicated to you? Why not shop with everybody else, but it be kind of luxury? I love it. I can't wait to see where that goes. Well, let's wind down then the show with some lighter hearted questions. Maybe one or two might be a little bit deep, but you can just let me know. So here we go. The first one is, what's the place in Japan? Now, can I ask you this? What's the place in Japan that you would most recommend people visit when they come here? Now, you're a newly returned Japanese to
I think
Japan.
I'm the one asking. Yeah, I think I'm the one asking this.
You're the one that needs to know this.
Yeah. My hometown is Kamakura.
Ah, lovely.
So I would definitely say Kamakura.
Great, Kamakura. What about your favorite saying in either English or Japanese?
My parents always tell me this, and maybe it's because I have been a bit competitive in the past, but they tell me, makeru ga kachi. So it means to lose is to win. Maybe there are a few board games where I was a sore loser, but yeah, I really like that saying because it makes me take a step back, even in my professional deals and transactions, because you don't have to win on every point. It's good to take a step back and see a greater purpose, because there could be a win-win situation for everyone involved.
Interesting. How about a book you've recently read or a podcast that you're listening to? Not this one. Anything along those lines? Maybe a program you've even watched on TV or Netflix or something. Something that you've seen that you'd recommend.
I personally am more drawn to non-fiction novels. So I finished Sapiens recently, and right now I'm reading the second one, Homo Deus, which was also an exciting read. I think more a light-hearted read. I love psychology and relationships. So my latest obsession, I'm not sure if you've heard of this author called Esther Perel. She also does podcasts on relationship advice, and she records some of her therapy sessions, which are really interesting, because it's not just about relationships. I think one of the more recent ones that I listened to, it's about how to handle a difficult boss, which I fortunately have not been in that situation, but it's cool to think about, you know, how to handle conflict at work or things like
that. Very interesting. I'm sure it translates to other, right, people who you're working
Absolutely.
With who might be more senior. How interesting. Okay. And is that a podcast? We can put the link in the show notes.
The therapy sessions, I think, are a podcast, but she's also written novels on relationships.
Brilliant. Okay. If you were given an opportunity to spend a day with anyone, who would that be and why? Anyone. Historical figure, family person, someone you knew from your childhood, anybody. Who would that be and why?
I love classical music, so I think it would have to be a composer like Chopin or Rachmaninoff.
Oh my goodness, imagine what they'd say.
I think I'll just sit and listen to them all day.
It'll be two-way though. They want to hear from you, but I think they'd be very intrigued to hear what you had to say as well. And if I had a magic wand and could give you a talent, what talent would you like to have?
The ability to speak all the languages in the world.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Kotoe, for coming on the show today and actually being very brave to go on camera at your own choice. Did you have fun?
I think it's better to see your reaction than talk to a blank screen. Or is that not usual?
No, most people are pretty much kind of quite happy with the off camera, because I think it's, you know, you're sort of maybe first time. Most people are having a first time on a podcast. So they're perhaps got a few notes. They don't want people to see they're wearing, reading some notes, or they're not really reading them. They're just calling off bullet points. But maybe it feels a little more comfortable to be off. But I think on has been great, because I've seen your reaction as well. And your thinking process, which has been awesome to see. So thank you for doing that, because it's not common. So there you go. Well done. And for listeners who might be really interested in following up with you some more on things that you said, where's the best place to reach out to you? Is it through LinkedIn or through the website for the firm? What's the best place?
Yes, I have a LinkedIn profile. I think my setting is quite open, so people can find me and message me. I also have a work email that should be on my firm website, so people can message me on there as well.
Great. Well, I hope people do that. And I really hope that if they've been inspired to do something differently from what you've said and learn from what you've talked about, that they head on over to the review page and write a review. Give us 5 stars. Tell us what it was that you liked about the show. And we love seeing that. And it means that more people can see and hear this podcast. So that's all for today. Thank you, everyone. Cheers, kanpai, and bye for now. Thank you so much for listening today to this episode of Lawyer on Air. I really hope that you were inspired by the story you heard and that you discovered something new about women in the law. Please subscribe to the show so that you don't miss future episodes. And if you can think of even just one person to share this episode with, that would make my day. I invite you to connect with me to talk more. Jump on over to LinkedIn or Instagram, where you can find me, or send me a message via my website contact page. That's all from me today. I look forward to seeing you right here on the next episode of Lawyer on Air. Cheers, kanpai, and bye for now.